I care about statistical scarcity more than positional scarcity.
Have I killed fun?
Yes.
Podcast is going off the rails already.
They're pop-ups. They're not infield fly balls.
These guys told you look at FIP, not ERA. So wait for Kluber sale, but pass on Robbie Ray. Hey, real quick, Scott's bummed about the humidor. And pick your milk for breakfast cereal, Mount Rushmore.
All right, everybody, welcome to another week of Fantasy Baseball. Today it is Monday, March 12th. Adam Azer, Scott White, and Heath Cummings. No Chris Towers on today's show. Quick question before we get started. How long do I get to complain about daylight savings time and losing an hour? Because I feel like I'm going to milk it for a solid week.
I think it's totally overblown. Maybe it's just because I don't keep a very consistent bedtime, but like, I hardly even notice when it happens.
Yeah, I definitely noticed this morning. See, I was under the impression that we were supposed to start drinking earlier yesterday because of daylight savings time. Apparently, that's not a thing.
No.
But yeah, I screwed that one up. And apparently, this may be the last time we ever change the clocks in Florida. So.
No kidding.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that's actually a good thing, but they're talking about permanent daylight savings. It's on the governor's desk, which I believe means that Monday Night Football is going to start at like 9:30 now.
I think it would be a good thing if everybody did it, but yeah, I don't like having to run that calculation with the rest of the country being an hour behind in the winter months.
Yes, I believe in the winter, Florida will be its own time zone now.
Okay, that's very weird.
If it's approved.
It kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
That's very strange. All right, well, anyway, I live in New York, so I don't care about that. So we're going to catch you up on everything you may have missed over the weekend. Jake Arrieta is on the Phillies. Lance Lynn is on the Twins. There are some injury news items to tell you about. And we're going to tell you about the Podcast League. So stay tuned for that. Oh, and another way to get involved, we have a bracket challenge that you should participate in. All right, so here is a new segment, cleverly named. Sometimes the names of the segments just roll off the tongue, and this is one of them. So here we go. The most important thing people need to know from over the weekend that they might have missed, but we are on top of because we cover fantasy baseball. What do you think it is, Scott White?
I have a nomination. But you have something in mind, you're saying?
No, I don't. I'm asking you.
Okay.
What do you think people may have missed?
I think the is that we tell people.
Okay. Delino DeShields has been named the Rangers leadoff hitter and center fielder, which I think we were all expecting, but also a little hesitant to embrace after the way this played out last spring. But even going beyond that, manager Jeff Banister said he thinks he has the potential for 50 stolen bases. He thinks that's a realistic goal. His exact quote is, "I think that's a legitimate goal just based on his previous on-base performances and his speed. We feel he's that type of player." So we were already targeting DeShields as like a late-round steals source, but that was in the hope he'd give us the 29 steals he gave us last year. If it's 50, or even if Banister's being too optimistic and it's more like 40, that could be in today's environment a pretty darn valuable player.
How much better is Delino DeShields than Cameron Maben, who's going to start for the Marlins?
Well, I think Maben's playing time is less assured, and I think his stolen base prowess is less confirmed, because I mean, he stole a lot last year, but that hasn't been a consistent thing throughout his career, and there's certainly no stated goal from his manager of 50 stolen bases, and right. He's not as good of a hitter, so I'm moving to Shields up my rankings. I'm keeping Maben a late rounder.
So is there any reason to draft a Shields if you don't need steals? How good could he be? I mean, is he only draftable because of the steals, or do you think Delino Shields could actually be a good hitter and help in other areas?
If he actually stays at the top of the lineup all year long and he delivers on his potential as a hitter, I think there's a pretty good chance that he's actually valuable in all formats, maybe even as a third outfielder. I don't think that is the most likely situation,
okay. But
it's certainly possible.
Yeah, I was pretty excited about him last year. And
yeah.
They never gave him enough of a chance, I think. But he also didn't do all that well. I mean, this is a guy... His slugging percentage in three seasons is .374, .313, and .367. So, you know, but But give him some regular bats. Let's see what we can do, Delino DeShields. Get some runs, get some steals. Good stuff, Delino DeShields. How about you, Heath? The most important thing people need to know from over the weekend that they might have missed, but we are on top of because we cover fantasy baseball.
Noted good guy was suspended for PEDs, Jorge Bonifacio. 80 games, and he wasn't particularly exciting for fantasy, but he was good enough last year that I had no reason to think that he wasn't going to be the starting right fielder going into this year, and there was a real crunch with the Royals. We've seen them sign Duda, sign John Jay, bring back Moustakas, and all that really did, in my opinion, was really limit the chances for sleepers like Jorge Soler and Hunter Dozier, and now it looks like I can't imagine we're not going to see Soler in right field on a pretty regular basis. He already has 4 home runs this spring, looking very much like a 3 true outcomes guy. I think 20 of his 37 plate appearances have ended in a walk, a home run, or a strikeout. He's not going to do a lot for you in points leagues, but in Roto, he could be a very nice source of power, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's a middle of the lineup hitter.
So it's Soler, really, his better value for you, and DeShields for Scott. Yeah, just, well, not specifically, just you, this is who you named. I know DeShields is big for both of you, but in a vacuum, who do you think is a better player, DeShields or Soler, or is it completely 100% category dependent?
It's DeShields right now. Soler has more upside.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's how I'd put it too.
You know, I feel like every year the Royals have big spring training numbers. Am I crazy?
They are very
great park.
They're professional ball players that come ready to go, Adam.
Do they play in Surprise?
They do.
Yeah, so it's always like when the season starts. Surprise, they're not that good.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, though, because I'm looking
at it's not exactly always like that. I mean, they've actually been good most of the
time. I remember getting
years.
Faked out in my early years of as a fantasy analyst by, like, Mark Tehan having a big spring. And that's the one that comes to mind. But I feel like that's happened with a few Royals.
It didn't really happen last year, I'll say that. I remember Lorenzo Cain was one that kind of I remember being like amazing in spring training before he was very good. Of course, I could be making all of this up. So anyway, thank you for the most important things that people may have missed. Here's an important Twitter poll you may have missed. I decided let's just put it to the test. Let's figure it out. Do you drink the leftover milk after finishing your cereal? Did you guys vote in this?
No.
Nope.
All right, we had nearly.
I can tell you, I didn't do it this morning, though.
Nearly 1,200 votes. 80% said yes, love that milk. And 20% said no, gross.
Not surprising at all.
That's weird.
Yeah, it was a little disappointing.
Where are your manners?
It's obviously not weird. It's socially acceptable. 80% of people are doing it. You are weird.
No. You should never tip a bowl up to your lips. That's gross.
Completely and totally wrong.
What about the soup? Can you drink the broth in soup?
No.
Absolutely.
Do you do that?
Yes. Sure.
What? Now, that's pretty... Maybe in the privacy of your own home, but out in a restaurant?
Well, yeah. I'm not saying I'm doing it at a restaurant. No, but I don't really... I cannot remember ever going to a restaurant and ordering soup.
What about like...
What?
Do you like
soup's great.
When the chips are almost gone, do you like tip the bag up to your mouth and pour the little crumblies in?
Soup is what you eat on a Sunday when it's kind of chilly outside or when you don't feel like fixing a lot of meals so you just make enough for the whole week to have leftovers.
Or if you hate salad.
You don't go pay $20 for a soup somewhere.
No, but if you get the choice of a soup or a salad, like I don't like salad, so I go soup, you know? All right, Scott, did we ever fully discuss you moving Trey Turner up to third overall in Roto?
No, we were still in like the position preview mock draft vortex. So we didn't hash it out completely.
It was a big move for you, right?
Yeah. It was a resignation of sorts.
I mean, how far up the rankings from like what 10th or so to third in Roto?
Yeah, in Roto. I didn't move them in head to head, but
points. You mean?
Right, in points. Yeah, so, I mean, it was basically just coming to grips with the idea. It was mostly preparing for auctions that kind of revealed it to me. Just, like, I valued him more than my rankings were saying I valued him. It just, like, I'd start planning an auction strategy around Trey Turner. And it's like, if I feel like he's that pivotal for my Roto teams, I should probably rank him where everybody else ranks him. And if we're going full disclosure, I mean, it's always a little tough because you're putting your rankings together in like November or what it is. We're obviously completely blindfolded to what everybody else is thinking. And it's a big project that takes weeks to do. And so it's when you see something like that where like it's going to take a lot of work to correct, basically. It's easy to want to stand by your original thinking. I don't want to say just out of sheer laziness, but there is probably some of that aspect to it. Just, okay, if I thought this on my own, then I shouldn't let everybody else's input change my mind. And plus, it's going to take a lot of work to fix anyway. But, you know, eventually it just became too hard to defend, and so I moved it.
All right, so Trey Turner is third in Roto for Scott. He's second in Roto for Heath. And in ADP, he's fourth in Roto. It's Trout, Altuve, Arenado, and Trey Turner. And, you know, it might be hypothetical right now, but for me, it's legit. I know I have the third pick in a Roto or head-to-head categories league. I don't remember the format. And it's actually 14 teams. I know I have the third pick, and I don't know who I'm going to take. I still think I want to take Arenado. I think he's going to be better, I would think, in definitely three. I would probably give runs to Turner.
Yeah, I think it's really two.
I think it's a close call on batting average, too.
Yeah? You think so?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't at all be surprised to see Trey Turner have a higher average than Arenado this year.
I mean, Nolan Arenado's hit 300 once, right?
I think so.
Was that last year?
Last year. It was his highest batting average by 15 points. His highest BABIP by 23 points. So he's probably, I mean, he's awesome, but he's probably going to be closer to 295.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fair. All right. It's a tough call. Maybe I do go. Let me ask you this. Is there any chance? Because I think Arenado is so safe.
Right. Yeah.
Is there any chance Trey Turner is just not a good hitter next year? This year?
No. Well, to be fair, he wasn't a very good hitter last year. Right. What was his batting average? 270?
284.
284. But that was with, like, the lowest possible line drive rate you could see him having. Like, half the line drive rate he had as a rookie. So, I mean, that as a hitter last year, sorry, that was weird saying last year twice in a row like that. As a hitter last year, that seems like the worst case scenario for Trey Turner. And he was still studly because he ran so much. So, I don't know. I think he's really good.
Trey Turner, his first 36 games, he was awful. He had a 670 OPS, and most of it was like Coors Field production. He was just terrible for 36 games. And then his last 62 games, he had an 857 OPS. So he's really had, in his young career, one terrible slump, and mostly been very good. All right, there you go. Now another question, another Roto categories question. Then we will get to, you know what, let's move the order around. All right, we'll do this question next. This question will be, what are the best categories? Because I'm seeing a lot more 6x6, 7x7 leagues. I think Heath was talking about that last week. What are the best categories? Well, we'll get to that in a second. Let's get to the news and notes. We got to talk about Jake Arrieta. 3 years, $75 million deal with the Phillies. Also, Lance Lynn, 1 year, $12 million with the Twins. Those are the big news items. And those are two guys who have been, in Arrieta's case, the last 2 years, a lot better at home than on the road. In Lance Lynn, most of his career better at home than on the road. Now they're moving to new stadiums. So Arrieta, 3 years, $75 million to the Phillies. Value up, down, or the same?
I'm leaving him the same because I didn't have high hopes for him ending up on a really good team in a good park. I think this is fine. Like, it's not a very good park. This has a lot more to do with Jake Arrieta, in my opinion, than the Lance Lynn situation does. If he gets back to pitching like Jake Arrieta can pitch, then being in Philadelphia is not going to hurt him.
Yeah, because a big part of what made Jake Arrieta studly in the years that he was he was so good at keeping the ball on the ground, keeping it in the park. That was a big part of the formula for him. But I'm a little more concerned about it because I'm not hopeful of him getting back to that. And since, you know, his home run rate basically doubled last year, playing in a park that's pretty neutral, going to what was the worst home run park in baseball last year, it's going to make it harder for him to I guess mask those deficiencies that developed last year that he was able to do specifically in the second half, bringing his ERA down to something palatable. But you know, I wasn't going to like him no matter where he landed, just because I'm so worried about the decline aspect of this. It's just going to this park specifically is going to exacerbate that. If that's really what's happening here, if he really is declining.
I would still rather draft him than Ohtani, than Kyle Hendricks, than Sonny Gray, than Jameson Taillon. But I've got him behind guys like Alex Wood, Rich Hill, Lance McCullers.
I might make an exception Sonny Gray there. I might put him behind Gray. But I know I have Gray higher than you do. So.
Right.
Well, I mean, actually, you guys couldn't be farther apart on air. I mean, you could technically. But you're so far apart on Jake Arrieta.
Scott's going to come my way again.
Yeah, I need to move him down some more. But I noticed also, I think Heath just has starting pitchers ranked lower in general.
But I have him 34th at starting pitcher.
Yeah, okay.
And Scott right now has him 19th. So I can't imagine you're going to drop him to the 30s.
No, probably low 20s.
And putting guys like Lance McCullers, Blake Snell you have ahead of him, Heath, Tanner Roark.
Those two, not Roark. Roark's a little different animal. But for McCullers, for Snell, for Rich Hill, that's probably more about my roto strategy than it is about Jake Arrieta.
Which is what, just like get the best guys on a per inning basis? And
exactly.
Yeah, not worry about innings as much. All right.
Exactly.
And then, yeah, because you do have Arrieta ahead of McCullers in points leagues. I mean, to sum it up with Arrieta, look, he was amazing until basically after the All-Star break of 2016. And the last year and a half's been a little rocky. Last year, for some reason, he had about twice as many road innings as home innings. He had 50 more innings on the road than at home, which was weird. And he gave up 19 home runs on the road and only 4 at home. And his ERA was a run higher on the road.
Part of that is that he did a worse job of keeping the ball out of the air. I think he had a career high fly ball rate, 34.4%. His line drive rate was 20%. So like 55% of the balls hit against him were in the air. That's partially his fault. Part of it was a little bit of bad luck. He's been around a 10% home run to fly ball rate his entire career. He was 14% last year, and he didn't give up hard contact at a real hard rate. So I do think even if he continues to give up fly balls, going to a worse park, I would still expect his home run totals to come down a little bit this year.
Okay, so then let me ask you this final stuff on Jake Arrieta. Two things and what you make of them. Number one, post All-Star break, he had a 2.28 ERA, but only 61 strikeouts in 67 innings and 8% swinging strike rate. What does that mean to you?
Part of it was he made some adjustments to get more ground balls. It still wasn't the rate like we saw in 2015 and 2016. A big part of it also was he had a 235 BABIP during that stretch. So, you know, it was kind of fortunate.
Okay. And then second thing for Arrieta, last thing, how much do you, and this goes with John Lester too, how much do you value, think of the World Series effect pitching deep into the season in 2016? Did it carry over and make their numbers look bad in 2017? And can they rebound?
I don't know that it did for Arrieta, because the year before that he'd thrown 229 innings, and he only threw 197 in the regular season in 2016. So I'm not sure I buy that with him.
Okay, yeah,
I'm more likely personally to buy that with younger pitchers, and maybe that's wrong, but
maybe. I mean, he did actually throw more innings in 2015 than 2016 when you combine the postseason.
Right.
So it's a good point. All right, then moving on, Lance Lynn, you got like. This guy is innings, good ERA, consistent pitcher, but I know you must hate the strikeout rate. That was 40 walks and 60 strikeouts after the All-Star break, even though he had a 3.21 ERA.
I'm glad Chris is not here, because he would disagree with this and probably be right, but I'm just going to say it anyway. This just looks to me, and some of these, like the Mike Moustakas thing didn't make any sense. He took the worst end of free agency I think anyone could. But this one just looks like baseball teams being a little bit smarter. Lance Lynn was exceptionally lucky last year. He had a 4.82 FIP, a 4.85 Sierra, and his ERA was 3.43. We'd say, well, at least he's an innings eater. You know what? If he had had normal luck last year, he wouldn't have been an innings eater. He threw 186 innings over 33 starts. With that type of luck, a 79% strand rate and a 244 BABIP against, if he had just had normal luck, he probably throws 170 innings last year with a terrible ERA. I want no part of Lance Lynn.
I guess I'm going to take the positive side of this. Like, you're going to pay a lot less for Lance Lynn than Jake Arrieta on draft day, and it wouldn't surprise me if they give you similar numbers. Yeah, last year, if you're just assessing Lynn on last year, it does certainly look like he overachieved, but it was first year back from Tommy John surgery, and for most of his career, like, yes, he's always outperformed his FIP, but like the FIP was usually in the low to mid threes.
It's
like,
weird.
It's
weird. He outperformed his FIP the 2 years before he got hurt by about a half a run. The 2 years before that, he was worse than his FIP.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, low to mid threes is what he's profiled as in terms of FIP, in terms of ERA, prior to Tommy John surgery. There was a drop in strikeout rate his first year back. I don't think that's surprising, first year back from Tommy John surgery. So, like, I've never thought of Lance Lynn as a frontline pitcher. The whip's always a little on the high side. The strikeouts are always a little on the low side. But I think that's basically to the point I'm at with Jake Arrieta now. And just, you know, based on usage last year, I'm not sure Arrieta's the safer bet for innings either. So, like, it has nothing to do with him going to the Twins specifically. I just think Lance Lynn might be a little undervalued right now.
So, Lynn, you mentioned the strikeouts a little on the low side and the whip a little on the high side. I do wonder if he's a guy who's better suited for a points league than a categories league or roto league.
Yeah, probably.
He is if he gets that fantastic luck again. But otherwise...
Or if he just goes back to pitching like he used to before Tommy John. I mean, it's possible. Like, he almost had a strikeout per inning pre-All-Star break. And then after that, I don't know, maybe he just ran out of gas and the strikeouts plummeted.
I know you hate it when I do this, but I am going to say... Steamer has him projected for a 4.95 ERA.
Yeah, I just wonder, like, why is last year the thing to look at rather than his entire career, you know?
You can blend his entire career and say he's going to be better. Maybe he has a 4 ERA. I don't see.
And to, like, because I'm basically assessing Jake Arrieta very negatively based on just what he did last year, and I'm giving a positive spin to Lance Lynn. Kind of excusing what he did last
year.
Seems
inconsistent, as Chris
would say. It does seem inconsistent, but you know what makes it easy to justify? The price difference. Like,
right.
you can take a glass half full approach to a guy who's going to cost you very little. It's hard to be that optimistic for a guy who's going to cost you a top 100 pick, like,
I mean,
Arrieta will.
To be clear, I'm not going to draft either of them. But since ADP boy is not here, I don't know what the difference in ADP is.
I can tell you, it's huge. I mean, first of all, Lance Lynn is going one pick after Blake Snell. Blake Snell is like the 56th pitcher off the board. Arrieta is going 95th overall, and Lance Lynn is in the 200s. He's 216. So Snell is crazy underdrafted. But this group is Lance Lynn. We're talking about pitchers 58 through 60. Lance Lynn, Faria, Porcello. Who's your favorite?
Lance Lynn?
I don't even know. I guess probably in Roto. No, I'm just going to stick with Porcello.
Okay.
You know what? I said Lance Lynn a little too quickly because I know I have Faria ranked the highest of three. Faria's had a really rough spring.
Yes, he's on my spring losers list. He's been terrible. Yikes. So that's something to keep an eye on.
And maybe
sure.
It means nothing, but for a guy with as little experience as he has, and for the, you know, the Rays are attempting something a little different with their starting rotation, which is another hurdle for him to clear. Yeah, I'm a little worried about Jacob Faria.
Faria has numbers that are hard to believe. Like the 16.62 ERA is one thing, but five walks, no strikeouts in 4 1/3. That's hard to believe. So
that
far.
Seems bad.
That's pretty bad. All right. So anyway, I think that pretty much concludes it on Lynn, but it's probably a park downgrade, right? Cause he is a guy who's been a lot better at home.
It is a slight park downgrade. Yes.
Okay. More news. Robinson Cano is going to have an MRI on his hamstring, but he doesn't think it's serious. We'll keep an eye on it. Ryan Braun hates first base. that doesn't look like a great option right now, putting him at first base.
Ooh. Bad news for Domingo Santana. Hope somebody steps up and makes the Brewers an offer.
Or is it just bad news for Ryan Braun? Like, could they just go with Santana over Braun?
I'd be surprised.
I don't think that will happen in April on opening day.
Right.
But I think there is a very good chance that he plays more than Ryan Braun this year.
Right. Yeah, I mean, between Braun and Kane, you do have two pretty injury-prone players in the outfield. Jorge Bonifacio suspended 80 games for PEDs. Heath talked about that. White Sox outfielder Luis Robert, if that's how you pronounce it, will miss about 10 weeks with a sprained ligament in his thumb. Evan Longoria has a sore ankle. Corey Knebel has a tweaked knee. Kenley Jansen had hamstring tightness. So those just very day-to-day for now. How about Jonathan Lucroy to the A's, guys? What do you think about that?
I'm glad he has a team.
Yeah. And probably, you know, a number one role, which I wasn't even sure he was going to have as late as this was dragging on. Yeah, I don't expect a big bounce back, especially in that environment.
Yeah, not a good park. A little bit of a park downgrade from Colorado to
just a little.
Would you guys take Lucroy or a Dodgers catcher?
I'd take Yasmani Grandal right now.
I'd take either Dodgers catcher.
Wellington Castillo or Jonathan Lucroy?
Wellington.
Yeah, I like Wellington better than the Dodgers catchers.
Lucroy or Zunino?
Zunino and Roto.
Yeah.
All righty.
Lucroy and points.
I can't tell you how mad I am at myself in the auction that we did a few weeks ago for not getting Grandal and taking Zunino instead. Zunino was the guy I hit the dollar, like the extra, like bid an extra dollar button. I was like, why did I just do that? I'm going to win him now. Nobody wants him. Why did I take him? That was so stupid. But maybe he'll have a great year. Let's go, Zunino. Francisco Liriano is going to be in the Tigers rotation. You have AL only interest in him.
Sure. Yeah. I have AL only interest in anybody with a job. But no, I mean, like, he could still be a pretty good strikeout source.
Man, the Tigers rotation is bad.
Reds rotation takes a hit with Anthony DeSclafani with an oblique injury. Any news? There's Amir Garrett. I know you guys talked about him like 2 weeks ago, but you still feeling Amir Garrett?
That helps his chances of starting the year there.
Yeah. His spring took a turn for the worse, but yeah, I mean, one less competitor.
Matt Carpenter said his back felt good during an intra-squad game.
Good.
Delino DeShields will lead off and play center field for Texas. We talked about that. And Adam Eaton has played in some minor league games, and he's on track and hopefully will be ready for opening day. If not, shouldn't be long for Adam Eaton. So I ask you, what are the best categories? And I ask you this after I tell you about the best website and app for tickets. It's baseball time. It's tournament time. There are plenty of games to go to right now. Use SeatGeek to get there. Download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code FANTASY. You'll get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's $20 with the promo code FANTASY. Look, I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and my friends use it too because I've told them all how great it is, and it's time for you to use SeatGeek, the best way to find seats to sports, comedy, concerts, theater. I've used SeatGeek for baseball, for basketball, for football, for concerts. I love it. Saves me time and it saves me money. SeatGeek searches multiple sites, so you don't have to do the work anymore. Just search for an event on SeatGeek, and the app's going to help you identify the bargains. And every purchase is fully guaranteed. So right now, download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code FANTASY. Get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, download the SeatGeek app and use the promo code FANTASY. I have determined that people are doing a lot more 6x6, 7x7 leagues. I'm in a 7x7 league. I've also determined that I don't think there are more than 6 good pitching categories. So let's talk about the best categories. Let's make our ideal categories league. What does it look like?
I think mine's still 5x5, but I do have quality starts instead of wins.
Okay, so it's quality starts, strikeouts, ERA, whip, and saves.
I do kind of like saves minus blown saves as well.
Okay, I like that. That's cool. That's 5x5. Now, you want to put whip in there? You want to put wins in there? Sure. You want to put holds in there? That's fine.
Is it?
I mean, I don't want to do it. You want to do holds plus saves? That's fine. What I don't like seeing is another pitching ratio stat, because K per 9 pisses me off. I hate K per 9. And now I'm playing in a K per 9 league, and I want to stab it. I hate K per 9.
Well, first off, it should be K percentage and not K per 9.
Oh, really, Chris?
K percentage. Well, K percentage is much better. K per 9, you're getting rewarded for giving up, for facing more batters.
Actually, that's fine. That's a good point. I hate K percentage.
Yes, if you're facing that many more batters, though, nobody's going to want you for your ERA and WHIP.
They might want you for your K per 9.
No. No.
There are pitchers like Danny Salazar a couple of years ago, Carlos Rodon, have greatly benefited from it, and they can give you a league average ERA at the same time.
Scott, what do you think about pitching categories? What would be your preference?
I mean, I'm kind of a traditionalist about these things. Like, I totally understand wins are kind of a dumb stat in terms of evaluating players. Oh, this pitcher had this many wins, so he must be a good pitcher. This one didn't, so he's bad. Like, I get that. I do kind of like the strategy of trying to figure out where I can find wins. Like, to me, that's a fun exercise. It's also kind of a frustrating exercise, but that's part of what makes it fun. So I want to stick with wins. And honestly, on the hitting end, are we just sticking to pitcher stats now, or can we talk about?
Let's wrap up pitcher stats, because okay. The quality starts a little bit more interesting since starting pitchers don't go that deep into games anymore.
Yeah, there's become a greater differentiation there between the good and the bad pitchers than there used to be, which makes it more defensible.
And you also have brought up innings as an extra stat, which is fun.
Yeah.
The problem with that is you can do this. I am not somebody that says one way is good and the other way is bad. I like playing with lots of different rules. But the problem with adding win innings or having wins and quality starts is you just eliminate the relief pitcher strategy. That is one strategy that's gone.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, I mean, wins, relief pitchers, if you went heavy on relief pitchers, you weren't going to do very well in wins either.
Right, but if you're adding a sixth category and it's a starting pitcher only category.
Yeah, Right. I had always presented innings as a replacement for wins, but yeah, I'm not sure. Like, that's just such a volume stat. Like,
as a replacement for wins.
That's all it's measuring
wins.
Is volume. So,
yeah.
And I just wonder in leagues that are not set up carefully, like, you know, daily lineups with daily transactions, just how exploitable is that category going to be? Just throwing in whatever crap starter is starting that night. I haven't vetted this, so I can't get fully behind it. Like, if I were to actually experience a league with innings instead of wins, I might decide it's a disaster. It's hard for me to foresee all the potential pitfalls there.
So Heath and I think are on the quality starts, strikeouts, ERA, WHIP, saves 5x5. Scott, well, let's just say 5. We'll get into hitting. Scott is the same 5, except he prefers wins to quality starts. And then, like, if you add holds and innings, does that kind of balance it out?
That balances it out. If I'm going to count holds, I kind of would rather just do saves plus holds.
Okay.
And keep it at 5, but.
All right, fair enough. All right, so then hitting. Scott, what are your favorite hitting categories?
My favorite are the traditional ones.
I can understand, though,
wanting to do on-base percentage instead of batting average. I think that's a better measurement. And it takes into account more of the things a hitter does well. So I guess that means I'm in favor of the Tout War setup, which is the traditional 5 on each side, except replacing batting average with on-base percentage. I'm fine just sticking with batting average, but I'm fine going on-base percentage, too.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
Yeah, I greatly prefer on-base percentage to batting average.
I don't know about great, because I feel like walks are lame. So,
right. Yeah, understandable.
Like, put the bat on the ball. People swing the bat.
Oh, gosh.
No, walks is good to hit, right? Whatever. But, yeah, I'm down for that. 5x5 with OBP and quality starts or batting average, with whatever. But if you want to add some categories, I guess people want to get away from 5x5. Here's one thing I kind of want to stress. I don't think you need to have an even amount of pitching and hitting categories.
I agree.
And everybody, you know, some people are kind of obsessed with that. We've got to be 7x7, 6x6, whatever. No, like, do 7x6 if you want. And I'm going to propose that to the league I'm in, because we're just – Caper 9 is driving me crazy. Like, I don't want that. I don't want that at all. Maybe I'm being selfish. But we don't need 7 pitching categories. Like, do 7x6. Who cares? Big deal.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the argument would be, well, that skews things toward hitters. And so – you know, pitchers are going to be undervalued by comparison. I don't know if that's necessarily true. It would depend on what the categories are.
I mean, I think 5x4 would be different than 7x6, you know? Like, you have so many categories.
Yeah.
That doesn't skew it as much.
I also like changing stolen bases to steals minus caught stealing.
Totally fine with that. Yeah, why not? Why not?
In terms of adding hitter categories, and one of my frustrations with category leagues in general is that, you know, compared to points, there's a lot of contributions players make that make them good or not so good that are not even valued on any level in those formats. It's such a narrow focus on those five categories. But I don't know that adding categories is the solution to it. Like, if you added doubles as a category, if you added triples as a category, like, another problem with the categories league setup is that these are all weighted on the same level, when obviously a double doesn't equal a home run.
Well, that's why total bases is a better category.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Walks plus hit by pitch.
No. That's OBP. Walks plus hit by pitch. No, that's OBP. But total bases is a good category. I like total bases.
So you're rewarding home runs twice.
No, maybe total bases instead of home runs.
Yeah.
Well, if home runs are more important than other things, then I think they should be rewarded twice.
Well, I don't know that they are. They're important because they get you four bases. Well,
that's twice as many as a double.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, a stolen base is – we're already down the path of a stolen base is weighted just like a home run, which is itself crazy.
It's true.
So, like, I don't think there's ever going to be a way to reconcile that completely with the rotisserie, with the categories set up. So I just think if you wanted to add total bases as a category, I could understand that, but doing like doubles and triples individually, that's taking it too far.
So the bottom line is, we are boring and we like 5x5. There you go. Replace batting average with OBP and maybe wins with quality starts. And we move on. And some fun stuff to announce. Here we go. First of all, who's going to win the tournament, guys? How are you feeling about the Jayhawks?
It depends completely on if Azubuike gets back, but they have had a player really stepped up. Silvio D'Souza played awesome during the Big 12 tournament, and if Azubuike comes back and those guys are both playing at that level, I think Kansas has a real shot.
Okay, yeah, sure. I think Villanova's going to win. No, I kind of, I don't know, I like Duke.
The bracket's out.
The bracket's out,
without,
of course.
I can set up a bracket.
Not only can you, you have to, because last year we had more than 1,400 listeners join us in a bracket challenge, and the winner, now unfortunately it has to be the winner after the second weekend, right before the Podcast League draft, the winner, whoever has the most points, is in the Podcast League. So that's one way in. I will reserve a Podcast League spot for whoever is leading the bracket challenge at that point.
Who won it last year?
I don't remember.
Is our draft?
Our draft is Monday, March 26th. It's 2 weeks from today.
So they are going to get just a little bit less than 24 hours notice that they are in the league.
Yeah, but if they're listening, they know that they're in if they are in first place.
Okay.
Hey, we did it last year and it worked. So here's our Podcast League information. First of all, about the bracket challenge, follow me on Twitter at Adam Azer, AIZER. I will tweet out links to it. You can follow along there. You can email if you need to fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and I will send you a link to it. I'll create it at some point today. So again, at Adam Azer, AIZER, and fantasybaseball@cbsi.com if you need a link to the bracket challenge. But join it. And standard rules after, I guess it's heading into the Final Four, it's going to be like after the Elite Eight. Whoever has the most points is in the Podcast League. I'll have to break any ties by myself. But the Podcast League, the Points League, our draft will be Monday, March 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern. Monday, March 26th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 12-team Points League. We already have one participant for that. Wednesday, March 28th is going to be the Rejects League, or the For the People League, which is a 16-team head-to-head categories.
That's the day before the season starts.
Yes. It's starting early this year. Wednesday, March 20th, 8 p.m., Heath, does that work for you?
That will be 8 p.m. Eastern, and we also already have one person in. I haven't read the email, but Carl May is in.
And Isaac, right?
Isaac, I guess I already said he was in too, so we have two. And the way to get in, it's different. How are people getting into the Podcast League?
Haikus. Haikus. They're going to send us haikus to fantasybaseball@cbsi.com.
I assume there are some people out there that would prefer to be in the For the People League. And just expressing that is a good way to get into the For the People League. Also, Like, I like it when people make send emails telling how much they like me. So that might help you as well. Or if you could come up with a clever rule that we could add, the For the People Podcast League is always looking to evolve as a league. If you could come up with a clever rule that will further make Scott White pull his hair out, that may get you in as well.
All right, so Scott and I will share a team, I believe. Heath and Chris will share a team, and we'll have 12 spots for listeners for the For the People League, which is Wednesday, March 28th at 8 p.m. That's the draft. Monday, March 26th at 8 p.m.
14 spots for listeners, right?
My bad, yeah, 14.
Yeah.
Monday, March 26th at 8 p.m. Is the Podcast Points League, 12-team head-to-head points. And, okay, if you cannot make that time, please do not apply. If you can make that time, please apply by submitting your haiku. And a haiku is three sentences, five syllables, seven syllables, five syllables. Here are two examples. Haiku number one. Adam, Scott, Heath, Chris. What do they have in common? Fantasy baseball. That's number one. That's pretty good, right? Number two. The best cereal? Dude, this is so obvious. Clearly Golden Grahams. Those are haikus.
Are those haikus written by you?
Yeah, I wrote them. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not very poetic, are you?
Thanks, Scott. All right. So I think we have two segments left plus emails, and I think we'll save the crazyometer for tomorrow. I'm going to ask you guys, I'm going to give you guys a prediction, and you're going to tell me how crazy it is. Like Billy Hamilton hits well. You're going to put that on the crazyometer. We'll do that tomorrow.
Whoa!
Yeah, I know. Pretty crazy.
That's, yeah. That's where it ranks.
Miguel Cabrera finishes top five in AL MVP. You'll tell me where that is on the crazyometer. But instead, let's do spring training, good and bad. Let's see who's moving up. Oh, our boy John Hopkins, one of our favorite listeners, sent us a link to some Lucas Giolito video of him striking out eight Cubs this weekend. So he's been good. And here are just names of pitchers who have been good. Giolito, Luke Weaver, man. Nine innings, one run, nine strikeouts, one walk so far. Garrett Richards has a 2 ERA, two walks, 12 strikeouts. That's pretty much it. And then Steven Matz had a better start. There are others. You guys should definitely contribute. Definitely contribute. But the three that I had were Giolito, Weaver, and Richards that kind of stood out to me.
Yeah. No, those definitely stood out this – well, Giolito and Weaver definitely stood out this weekend. Weaver's actually added a slurve to his arsenal this spring. Was basically fastball changeup last year and thought hitters caught up to it late. But there was an interesting piece on MLB.com about him because it kind of talked about what makes him so effective, what makes him so hard to hit. And basically he pushes off differently from any other pitcher. And it causes the ball to come out at a weird angle. So there is effectiveness for him beyond just the stuff. And it kind of makes sense looking at the minor league numbers, insanely low ERAs. But that combined with what we saw last year, combined with what we saw this spring, I don't have any shares in Luke Weaver yet. Maybe I should get some.
Okay. Are you more encouraged by Lucas Giolito?
Yeah. I mean, it was certainly eight strikeouts in four innings from a guy who's, our main concern about him was not enough missed bats. I mean, curveball was clearly working in that game. It looks like a great swing and miss pitch for him. And honestly, the swinging strikes weren't as bad as the strikeouts themselves in the stint we saw him last year. So I do think there's some untapped potential here. And obviously going much later than Weaver.
Yeah, almost free on draft grade, 237 ADP for a guy with his pedigree. I'm not saying that I buy into that type of performance, but it's much more notable when he's so cheap.
Okay, that's Lucas Giolito and Luke Weaver, and then as far as Garrett Richards goes, he's in between Weaver and Giolito, I assume?
In terms of where he's going. I think he's more proven than we're giving him credit for.
Garrett Richards,
My big concern with him is that mid-year he will, but I don't expect him to pitch deep into games. And I don't expect him to make as many starts as other pitchers. And those two things combined are really going to limit the upside.
Yeah, I hear that. But I think it's also worth pointing out, he's been efficient this spring, and he was crazy efficient coming back from injury last year, too. I mean, there were two five-inning starts and a six-inning start. But he didn't throw 90 pitches in any of them. It was between 65 and 85.
And 90 is probably his ceiling in April.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like, you know, now that they've worked him back in last season, they're just going to, I don't know, maybe not turn him loose completely, but they're not going to be nearly as careful, especially since they're going with the six-man rotation and he'll have more time to recover between starts. But I don't know for sure. I just think inning for inning, he could be dominant. And it's not, you know, it's not in the super risky way we've been saying that about Tyler Glasnow and Matt Harvey. Like, I feel like more likely than not, inning per inning, Richards is going to be dominant.
All right, that's Garrett Richards. So Garrett Richards is going. It's John Gray, Danny Duffy, Garrett Richards, Chase Anderson, Michael Fulmer. Gray, Duffy, Richards, Anderson, Fulmer. Fulmer's, you know, got to be last in that group, right?
Yeah, though, I mean, it was good to see him come out and pitch well his first start after having that nerve transplant surgery, which I think was the same one Matt's had. And he did not come out looking good. So, yeah, I mean, Fulmer, I've never been a big Fulmer guy because the strikeout rates have been low, but he's gotten good results with it.
But as far as Richards goes, would you take him ahead of John Gray or Danny Duffy?
No.
No. I don't think so. Like, I'd be more likely to draft him than either of those guys. Certainly Gray, but it has to be later.
All right, then. Let's go through these hitters. Quick thoughts. Francisco Mejia, Indians catcher, batting .421 with two home runs.
He's not going to start the year in the majors. So, I mean, it's exciting in a two-catcher league if you just want to punt one of your catchers at the start of the year, but it may take until the middle of May or June before you see him.
Okay. Ronald Acuna, talk about him again. .419 batting average, 4 steals, 4 walks, 7 strikeouts. Great spring for him.
Yeah, I think what people are really sleeping on is the steals potential. And, I mean, he's demonstrated it this spring. That's as scarce as that category is. He's probably worth drafting. You may not need to, but he's probably worth drafting in the top 10 rounds just for that.
Are you moving him up again this week, Scott?
I'll have to look at it again. I've moved him up quite a bit already. He's, I think, 30th for me.
This is Ronald Acuna we're talking about. Hey, I have a random question. I want to go back to, like, 5 minutes into the podcast.
Sure.
If I want to take Nolan Arenado instead of Trey Turner third overall, what if I just reach, like, very early for Delino DeShields? Like, round 12. Like, where I know I'm absolutely going to get him just for the steals.
I don't think that's a reach in Roto.
Okay, fine. Then I take him in round 10 just to make sure I get Delino DeShields. And now I have Arenado and DeShields to cover myself.
Have you seen DeShields go as early as round 12? Because
I'm just saying I don't think it's a reach based on value.
Okay. I mean,
so I'm back on round 12.
I'm always of the mindset you want to squeeze as much value as you can out of everything. So, like, the last point before I think somebody else is going to take him, that's where I want to take him. So just philosophically, I can't subscribe to that.
The outfielders being drafted in rounds 10 and 11 are Eddie Rosario, Ian Desmond, Ender Inciarte, Adam Jones.
Normal. It seems fine to take.
I don't want to take a chance. If I need steals, I don't want to take a chance on missing DeShields and take one of those guys.
And who knows? Maybe with this news, DeShields will ADP will shoot way up. I don't know. But
you know what I'm saying? Like, if I make sure I get DeShields, and what, like, could I just take Arenado and not Trey Turner?
I don't think it's exactly the same. Like, I could totally see how that would work out just fine for you. But a lot of things I want to do might work out fine for people. It's a lot of things nobody would think to do are going to work out great. It's not like, I think you have to put yourself in the position to have the best team possible. And I think intentionally overpaying for somebody by several rounds doesn't accomplish that.
Okay. So back to the good spring training hitters. Marcus Semien batting .407. He was like practically 2020 last year, or on pace anyway. Semien doing well. Yolmer Sanchez for the White Sox, second baseman, has a 1065 OPS. How about those two? I'm assuming Simeon's the only one that matters there.
Yeah, I don't have much interest in Yolmer.
All right.
Is
Semien a good middle infield option?
He's fine. Yeah, he's kind of the way he gets pushed out is kind of speaks to the way depth's increased at the middle infield spots this year, because he was, you know, he's above average on a per game basis last year. I don't know that, like, a spring without any home runs or steals, I don't know that that's catching my eye the way it caught yours, especially for a player who I see as more or less established.
Yeah,
but
true.
Sure.
I'm wondering if Jose Perella is going to play his way into a starting job this spring.
He has been... I've given him the leg up on Hunter Renfro anyway. But yeah, the spring performance, it's not even close.
He's got a .559 on base with 6 walks and 8 strikeouts so far.
And what's interesting is he's played some second base too, and they don't really have a good option there.
Okay. Jose Perella, yeah, he's an outfielder for the Padres, but if he plays second, that's very interesting. And he had a pretty good slash line last year. .288, .347, .490. Wow, pretty good.
Yeah. Padres are going to be good.
But he's 28.
He was one of those hitters who kept hitting well in the minors, and nobody wanted to give him a job, and it takes winding up with a team as with so little to offer as the Padres for that guy to break through sometimes. And that seems to have been what happened last year for Perella. I don't know why, as well as he hit for them down the stretch, I don't know why they'd shy away from that.
All right, let's go a little quicker here. A couple of catchers. Blake Swihart for the Red Sox and Austin Hedges for the Padres, who are going to be great. Both doing well, Swihart and Hedges.
And it wasn't too long ago that we thought Blake Swihart might be a high average hitter and a good bat or decent bat. But the only thing I've seen about Swihart is that a lot of teams are trying to trade for him.
Yeah, with the Red Sox, it seems like he's going to have to play a super-duper utility role where he's, you know, catchers among the positions he'd be playing. And it's not for sure they're going to be confident enough at his defense at other spots to want to go with that. And he's out of options. So it may be that he winds up with another team, and that would probably be the best thing for him, because it just doesn't seem like the Red Sox are going to be able to make the time for him behind the plate.
Well, Swihart and Hedges, are either of them worth drafting?
Hedges certainly in a two catcher league. Swihart, I think, is a little outside of that, at least as things stand right now.
How about Colorado first baseman Ryan McMahon? He's having a really nice spring with a .366 batting average, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. He does have 5 doubles. And in 2017 at AA, he had a .926 OPS, even better at AAA in the PCL. McMahon, I mean, nobody talks about him. Heath, he was your sleeper in the first base preview.
Yeah, and I will probably move him up again this week. Every week they go without signing Mark Reynolds. Makes me feel a little bit better. The Carlos Gonzalez signing doesn't help McMahon, but if he hits like this, it doesn't matter.
I think the Carlos Gonzalez signing helped distinguish McMahon from David Dahl a little more, because now, you know, one more mouth to feed in the outfield is going to favor the guy who plays first base versus the one who favors the outfield.
The only downside for McMahon could be if they decide to move Ian Desmond to first
or Parra.
What is his potential, McMahon, if he's the regular first baseman for the Rockies?
I don't know that it's that far from Trevor Story's rookie year.
Okay.
I would think it's a lot better, because he's not, you know, he's a really good contact hitter too. He hit .355 in the minors last year. And, you know, part of that was at a hitter friendly environment. Part of it wasn't. He hit .330 at Hartford.
Yeah, you need to have Ryan McMahon on your radar when you draft.
Yep.
Aaron Hicks is off to a nice start here in the spring, and what I love is 7 walks to 4 strikeouts. That was a huge development for Hicks last year. Before his oblique injury, he had 37 walks and 42 strikeouts in 60 games. So he's a nice little late-round pick, Aaron Hicks. How about any of these guys? Curtis Granderson, Trey Mancini, Yonder Alonso.
Yeah, not spring numbers aren't doing much for me for any of them.
Mancini is a guy that I think that maybe CBS is lower on than the rest of the industry. When it seems like he gets drafted when we do industry mocks a lot higher than he does when it's mostly just CBS guys. And he was pretty awesome last year. So he's probably somebody that deserves a little bit more credit than he's getting.
I want to mention a pitcher who wasn't in your group, Adam.
Sure.
Marco Estrada has had a great spring, and I think he's a big bounce back candidate, because he realized this offseason from watching some video, he was tipping his changeup last year, slowing his arm down visibly. And like, the changeup is the key to everything, because his fastball's high 80s, you know?
Yeah. I thought you were going to say he found his lucky horseshoe. He's going to get back to his .220 BABIP.
Maybe. I mean, as extreme of a fly ball pitcher as he is when he's on. Yeah, I think he's going to have a big bounce. I think there's the potential for a big bounce back here, and like nobody's paying anything for him.
I will fully admit that I'm biased against Marco Estrada. He's basically, like, his last 4 years, his FIP has been 488, 440, 415, 461. I think last year he just had an unlucky year, and he should bounce back, but maybe to a low 4 ERA.
And bad spring training players. Shohei Ohtani did not have a good start against Milwaukee, an inning and two-thirds. I think I might have the wrong line for him, but it wasn't good. So Ohtani, Paxton, Faria, John Gray, those are four pitchers who are off to bad starts. Ohtani, Paxton, Faria, and John Gray. Paxton and Faria have been terrible. Anything concern you guys there?
I'm more concerned about Faria than Paxton, but Paxton hasn't been throwing as hard this spring. And what I've read is that, like, he's so tall and lanky, it takes a little longer for his mechanics to sync up and for him to max out his ability like that, which I can buy. The Mariners don't seem worried at all. It's just hard for me not to worry a little when a guy who broke through because he started throwing 100 is throwing like 93, 94 instead.
Yeah, Paxton said that he's where he usually is at this point. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's something.
I can buy it. It's just hard, like when you're drafting Paxton as your sneaky number two, it's hard to look and see he's not throwing as hard this spring. You know, that's it does plant this little seed of doubt in your mind that maybe you should just ignore, but. It's one of those situations where probably the person who's not paying any attention to spring training is a little better off.
I think I just came up with a haiku for my feelings on Ohtani.
Oh, okay.
So you can laugh at how I got the syllables wrong just trying to do this on the fly.
Okay.
Ohtani? Nope, none. More like no Tani for me. Fade the Angel staff.
Fade the Angel. More like no Tani for me. Oh, nice. Nice, Seed. I think you got it. You nailed it.
Thank you.
And then there's Gleyber Torres having a crappy spring. I don't think he's going to be the starting second baseman.
No, I don't think he is either.
What's that guy's name?
Tyler
Miguel
Wade.
Andujar be the starting third baseman with Drury because Andujar's had a good spring.
Andujar's had a great spring. You talked about it the show I wasn't on. It's really Andujar's defense that concerns them.
Yep.
But man, he can hit. I don't know. I feel like it's going to be Tyler Wade at second and Drury at third to start the season.
Probably.
Yeah. And Torres is rusty. I mean, Torres missed so much time last year, so he's not helping his chances of making the opening day roster just yet. But look, it's only March 12th. There's still a couple weeks left there, a week and a half left of spring training, basically, and 2 weeks before. No, it's like 2 weeks of spring training, and then the games start in like 2.5 weeks, right? So, all right, let's finish with some emails here. James in Fort Worth. Dear Mike, John, Tom, and Jay.
Mike, John, Tom, and Jay.
They are basketball coaches. College basketball. Krzyzewski, yeah. Jay Wright, Tom Izzo, John.
Calipari?
Sure. Have the Cardinals turned into the Patriots of fantasy baseball? I tend to stay away from investing too heavily in anyone not named Tom Brady on the Patriots because their players seem to perform and be used inconsistently. I have compiled a list of players from the Cardinals over the years that were inconsistent from year to year, came out of nowhere to produce, or were one-year wonders. Matt Carpenter, Paul DeYoung, Tommy Pham, Matt Adams, Colton Wong, Jason Hayward, Stephen Piscotty, Randall Grichuk, Aledmys Diaz, Matt Holliday, late in his career, Johnny Peralta, John Jay, Alan Craig, David Freese, Adam Wainwright, Shelby Miller, Michael Wacha, Trevor Rosenthal.
That's a lot of names, and a lot of these names definitely do not fit the out-of-nowhere or one-year wonder type players.
No, I didn't think he meant that all of them were like that. I think that was they were separate categories.
Those were just random Cardinals that some of them had been one-year wonders?
Some had been out of nowhere. Some have been one-year wonders. Some have been inconsistent. I think the point was like you could never rely on your expectations for Cardinals players.
I don't think that's true.
Okay, we're not buying it. Thank you. It was a fun email, though, James. Thank you.
I do. The one thing I would say is I think that they do have a little short history here building of guys they bring from out of nowhere from the minor leagues that just disappear after 1 year.
All right, we'll see what happens with Mr. DeYoung. They gave him a nice contract. Michael says, I listened to the Friday podcast where you said closers aren't as valuable in points league. The ESPN guys say closers are more valuable in points. They even have Jansen as a first-round pick. Can you explain?
What?
Yeah, now here's the thing. I don't know what the points format is on ESPN, but the reason why I said that, if I said it, closers are less valuable in points leagues is because you only need two, as opposed to in like a 12-team roto league where everybody want, like every single closer is owned. So yeah. It actually was more of a scarcity thing. But even still, like even if they're extremely scarce, like there's no scenario
like
to
maybe
us where
saves are worth 10 points and strikeouts are worth a full point.
Maybe.
And that would elevate closers overall, and it would distinguish the really good ones from the really bad ones more.
What I think also probably factors into that is they're using some sort of value-based drafting where you're looking at what's the difference over the last couple of years between Kenley Jansen and the number 24 or 25 closer. And in comparing it that way with every other position, Jansen's going to seem much more valuable.
Last email for today. Or maybe we can do two here. Ben from the Metro DC area. Which players beginning the season on the DL are you going to stash?
Jimmy Nelson is top of the list for me. Among ones who I expect an extended absence from, there's a good chance somebody like Adam Eaton will spend a few days on the DL. So I don't know if we're going to count those.
Let's do the extended absences.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, he's last round, same as Salazar.
Michael Conforto, I think, is a little higher than him.
Yeah.
Maybe Irvin Santana in a points league, but I'm not doing it in Roto.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be. I mean, I'm starting to wonder if Daniel Murphy isn't going to miss extended time, but I know we haven't been drafting him. I know most people aren't approaching him that way. They're approaching him more like Eaton.
Right.
I don't know if they should. So
Pedroia?
Murphy made some progress over the weekend, though, right?
What'd he do?
I will look. I am not drafting Pedroia. I'm not sure I would be drafting Pedroia if he was healthy to start the year.
Right. All right, then. And then finally, Tom in Massachusetts. Greetings, non-zero chance. I have an interesting question regarding my AL-only auction. 9 teams, traditional roto. Our draft is on the 31st of March, which is the third day of the MLB season.
Boo.
What would you pay most attention to that isn't just small sample noise?
On the third day of the season, when only two pitchers at most have pitched for these teams? There's not a lot to take from that.
Maybe like where a guy's hitting in a lineup or something.
I was going to say batting order might be.
Batting order, but that
changes from day to day for a lot of these teams too.
Yeah, but like if DJ LeMahieu was leading off for the Rockies or something.
I read from the Rockies beat writer, the MLB.com Rockies beat writer, that the Cargo signing probably means Blackman's leading off again.
Okay, good, because I don't want to have to draft DJ LeMahieu. Yeah. All right, cool, guys. Thank you. Good show. Fun show. Thank you all for your emails. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. Looking forward to your podcast league entries. Get into our bracket challenge. And we got the crazyometer tomorrow on Tuesday's show. See ya.